This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the second hour of our program. Congressman Mark Pocan had been with us during the previous hour. We were taking your questions, mostly via Twitter, for the congressman. Our phones had failed briefly, but we're back. And on the line with us in this hour, and we'll get back to some of the issues of Paul Manafort and impeachment and all this other stuff that's going on, but on the line with us right now for this hour is Professor Michael J. And Professor, I'm sorry, I'm not sure how to pronounce your last name.
It's Behe.
Behe, B-E-H-E. Okay, and you are the professor of biochemistry at Lehigh University and an advocate of intelligent design, founding senior fellow of the Discovery Institute for Science and Culture, the author of numerous books, including your most recent, which I have here in my hand and I spent some time with this morning, Darwin Devolves, the new science about DNA that challenges evolution. Lay out your premise for us.
Okay, well, I'm a biochemist, so I study the molecular level of life. And back in the day, when Darwin proposed his theory, the cell was supposed to be just a piece of jelly, a kind of simple thing, protoplasm, they called it. But in the past 100-plus years, science has discovered that far from being simple, the cell is filled with really sophisticated and complex molecular machines. And I've written books saying that I think a better explanation is that they were designed rather than evolved randomly. And the latest book, Darwin Devolves, focuses on new results past 10, 20 years. And science has gotten the ability to pretty easily sequence DNA, kind of like, just falling off a log, and all sorts of organisms have been sequenced. And now we can answer the question of what are those mutations that help a species survive? What are they actually doing at the molecular and DNA level? And it turns out that the great majority are helping by breaking or degrading pre-existing genes. That is, they're taking something that's already there and tossing it out. And that's the where the title comes from. I call that
turning it off.
Exactly.
Or turning it off or suppressing genes. But,
exactly.
And in your book, I didn't, perhaps I missed it, I didn't read it cover to cover, but you were speaking about how Darwin was suggesting that evolution was a slow, gradual process. And in the years since then, of course, the theory of punctuated evolution has come about, which says that we've had five major extinctions. Each one of those extinctions involved massive species loss. And the opening, as the world recovered from being basically sterilized by these extinctions, the opening of massive ecological niches into which organisms which were highly adapted for those new niches but might have been maladapted previously were able to flourish, and thus the dinosaurs went away and were replaced by mammals, for example. Why didn't you address punctuated evolution in your book, and how does that how do you deal with the contradiction between that and the idea that Ymir or Muspel or Odin or created the world intelligently?
Okay, well, good questions. The first one is punctuated equilibrium. That was suggested by the evolutionary biologist Steve Jay Gould back in the day, 40 years or so ago. And it's an interesting observation, but what it is not is an explanation. It's a label for what people find. They see that in the fossil record, at least, I'm no paleontologist, but I read that in the fossil record, things stay the same for a long time and then pretty quickly change. And, well, that's interesting, but it doesn't address the question of how it changes, what drove those things. Same thing with the extinctions that you reference. Okay, there were massive extinction events, and then all sorts of new and cool forms arose, but that does not address the question of how that happened. That's intelligent design's focus. We don't worry about common descent. We don't worry about anything else. The question is, how in the world did all these complex machines and cool forms arise? And as to the reason,
well, how you know, the my father's, both my father's parents are from Norway. The Norwegians had they agreed with you that the world was the first world was Muspel. It was not this world. And this, you know, Frost ogre named Ymir slept, and under his left arm there grew a man and a woman, and they became ultimately, you know, and then out of that they became Bor and Bestella, where, you know, had three sons, and Odin was the oldest, and they basically created the world. And then, you know, when Ymir died, they flung his brains into the air and they became the clouds. And
ooh.
And I mean, you know, it's an elaborate story, actually. Why do you think that this story is any less cogent than the story in the Bible that your institute, the Discovery Institute, constantly references, the Christian Bible or the Jewish Bible?
Well, I don't know about who you have in mind, but as for me and my books, I don't reference the Bible at all. I don't talk about religious matters at all. I don't not only talk about Odin.
Well, how is intelligent design not a religious matter? You're arguing that there is something that created everything that we're experiencing right now, and you know, you make an argument that is fairly complex. And
yeah, sure.
there's an artificial intelligence guy right now who's making the exact same argument, only he's saying that what we're living in right now is a computer simulation by an advanced, you know, race of humans, you know, 1,000 years in the future, who have developed this elaborate computer simulation, and we're actually living in that. And
and
it's very similar. I mean, you know, it's the same theory, you know.
Sort of. Yeah, you're right. It is sort of similar, but I can talk.
So which is it?
Let me avoid that for right now and go
Why?
Back to your first question. Why is this not a religious idea? You say that clearly somebody designed this and so on. Well, I argue that it's not a religious idea for the same reason that the Big Bang is not a religious idea. Back in the 30s, when it was first proposed, lots of physicists simply hated the idea of the Big Bang, and many argued that it was a religious idea because it posited a beginning to the universe, and science needed, many people said, science had to have an eternal universe in order to avoid...
Well, you know, a large part of the Big Bang theory was that you have inflation and then you have collapse, and so it's really a cycle, that there's this thing here called the universe, and it goes through these cycles. Now we've got this multiverse theory and all this kind of stuff, but if there's an intelligent designer who created all this, who created the intelligent designer?
Well, the answer is I don't know. But whenever we see, a machine, or whenever we see a painting, or whenever we see things that have been put together for a purpose, we always conclude that it has been designed. And surprisingly, astonishingly, science has found in the cell amazing machines, really complex ones, and literally machines made out of molecules.
But these are machines, these molecular machines are demonstrably, you know, the product of evolution. I mean, you know, if you start with algae and end up with us, there's a whole bunch of steps in between, and that's called evolution. Are you suggesting that the intelligent designer actually created human beings fully formed just like we are right now? Is that your assertion?
No, of course not. Intelligent design does not dispute common descent or long periods of time, or that we arose ultimately from algae. It disputes Darwin's mechanism, that random mutation and natural selection.
Well, Stephen Jay Gould, disputed that, as you correctly pointed out. I don't know where we're... Oh, somehow, hang on just a second.
Okay.
Somebody is... I've got to dump this. Somebody's playing with our phones. My apologies, Professor Behe. Anyhow, you got the point of what I was saying, if you want to respond. Yeah, I mean, Stephen Gould was saying that, you know, Darwin's idea of slow progress and all that kind of stuff is overly simplistic. That doesn't mean that there's not, you know, some reality to evolution.
Oh no, not of course, not. And in my book, I clearly say that Darwin's mechanism can account for smallish changes, but Stephen Jay Gould
and Gould accounts for large changes. I mean, but there, you know, the fact of the matter is that there have been changes, right? So
sure.
So how do you handle the fundamentalist Christians who say no, God, you know, the intelligent creator, let's say, instead of God, not only created the universe, but created me, created people.
Well, I say I disagree. I say that I think there's good evidence for common descent. I think there's good evidence for humans descending from other species and so on. But I don't think it could have happened by random mutation and natural selection. And Stephen Jay Gould did say that, well, maybe things happen suddenly and rapidly sometimes, but he famously did not say how that could have happened.
No, he said as a result of disasters, of local disasters, of, you know, which can be things like drought and whatnot, or of you know, worldwide catastrophes like extinction events.
Well, a disaster at best only opens up a space into which other organisms might come. It does not explain how they get there. It's kind of like saying that, well, here's a brand new sheaf of
paper. Well, that's the point that Stephen Gould was making, is that, you know, mutations adapt some organisms to new environments that previously would have been considered maladaptions. Now they're positive adaptions. And there are people who make that argument on ADHD being, you know, an evolutionary advantage for people in the computer age.
Well, I don't know about that. But the thing is that if you read my book, Darwin Devolves, it's only been in the past 10, 20 years that science has been able to determine what these mutations are that help organisms. Stephen Jay Gould, unfortunately, died before that time. And what we now find is that most of the helpful mutations are ones that actually throw away pre-existing machinery.
And right, but you're just talking about the mechanism of it. I mean, you know, how can you deny the existence of it?
I don't.
So are you suggesting that the intelligent designer, this was what, you know, what Thomas Jefferson believed, was that the deists, that the universe was created by something intelligent, brought into being, and then that guy just stepped out of the way. Real quickly, is that your perspective?
No, that's not.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry we're out of time. This is a hard break. I have no control over it. Dr. Michael J. Behe is the author of Darwin's Devolves, the new science about DNA that challenges evolution. Thank you for dropping by.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good talking with you. We'll be back. Stick around. Back with more of your calls and the news of the day right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And our phones are working again at 202-808-9925. Give us a shout. And welcome back. Let's see here. James in Spokane, Washington. Hey, James, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Good morning, y'all.
Hey, James.
Tom, let me clear up a couple small points first. The last time I spoke with you, I used the term blackguard. That's pronounced, it's spelled blackguard. It's an English term. I'm sure you've read it before. Okay, you thought I said slacker.
I mean, cause okay.
It's kind of specific because it is a title of a household staff.
Somehow he just got taken off the air. James, try it again. I'm sorry, you got cut off in mid-sentence.
I'm still here.
Yeah, I'm listening.
Oh, okay.
You said it's the name of a household snail. This is a medieval English word, is it not?
Yeah, I think it probably goes back that far for sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's what we are to the rich people, certainly. We're just a perennial blackguards, you know.
We're just the snails on the ground that you ignore or you try not to step on or you do so, with great enthusiasm.
You don't necessarily wish them any harm, but, I mean, you know, if it should happen on your way to making a fortune.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly seems like that's what's going on. So the question then, James, is what do we do about it? Oh, somehow James keeps getting put on hold. I'm not sure why. I'm sorry, James.
I like the idea of socialism, honestly. Mm-hmm. You know? And the meaning of that, it's stupid that we're even talking about the meaning. Human civilization, the bottom line, human civilization is socialism.
Yeah.
The recording of history books, the dissemination of history books is socialism. You know, it's that fundamental. That's what we are.
So are you suggesting that if we want to stop wealthy people, and we're seeing this right now in this whole college admissions scandal and Jared Kushner's dad giving $2.5 million to Harvard and George Herbert Walker Bush giving money to Yale in order to get lousy students, Jared Kushner and George Bush, into prestigious colleges. Are you suggesting that by simply informing them about the nature of socialism, we're going to cause them to stop viewing us as common household snails?
Oh, no, I don't think they're directly related in that sense. I mean, their whole concept, this lip service, the no global warming, all that stuff, they don't believe what they're saying. It's total, what's the word, disingenuous, disingenuosity. It's just absurd. They know what's going on. They're just so neurotic and so into it.
So again, the question, James, and I frankly, the only answer I can come up with to this question is to go back to pre-Reagan tax policies that prevent the emergence of a billionaire class and that have CEOs once again making 30 times what their workers are making instead of, 1,000 times. The question, what do we do about this Valhalla level of wealth and them looking down on the rest of us as snails?
Yeah, well, we do have to take some of the money away from them fundamentally, clearly, and abruptly, and a progressive tax rate. You're right. We need to go back to that.
Yeah, and a strong inheritance tax. I mean, this is what Teddy Roosevelt was looking at back at the turn of the 20th century, was the rise of these robber barons, and then they were passing, in today's dollars, what would be tens or hundreds of billions of dollars along to their children. In the case of John D. Rockefeller, it was over $100 billion in today's money onto his heirs, and that's just not the American way. Anyhow, James, thanks.
Let me say briefly, Tom, before you go.
Real quick.
Green New Deal. We need to control the population of the planet, the population of people. Nothing's going to work otherwise.
Yeah, Green New Deal would be a good start. And yes to women's rights and birth control to reduce our population. We'll be back. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. So, the Flying Spaghetti Monster. On day one, the Flying Spaghetti Monster separated the water from the heavens. On the second day, because he couldn't tread water for very long and he'd grown tired of flying, now keep in mind he's made out of spaghetti, so if he gets in the water, he's got a problem. He created the land, complemented by a beer volcano. Satisfied, the Flying Spaghetti Monster overindulged in beer and woke up with a hangover. Between drunken nights and clumsy afternoons, the Flying Spaghetti Monster produced seas and lands for a second time, because he forgot he created it the world before, along with a heaven and a midget, which he named Man. Man and an equally short woman lived happily in the Olive Garden of Eden for some time until the Flying Spaghetti Monster caused a global flood in a cooking accident. I shared the Norse creation myth, which was or at least the little pieces of it, which were parts of, my parents' ancestors, or at least my father's ancestors. My mother's ancestors are mostly British and Welsh. And, how did it all start? And to what extent is the whole idea that creation science is a science simply a backdoor way of getting us to religion, of knocking down our belief in science with what are essentially BS arguments? Frankly, that's my opinion of it. And, this guy, very much lives in that world and has, a facile, an easy, a quick answer to any question. But it sure seems to me that this is just another scam for the cult. And I was talking about the cult before. So anyhow, we'll pick up some of your phone calls here. Howard in Indiana. Hey, Howard, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
Good.
On creation, read the Bible. Yes, I am a Christian, so I'll come right up front with that. But I would say to the people, instead of trying to study different things about how the world is created, we all must remember, everybody on your show, you, me, all of us, we all die. When we die, we're going to get the chance. We'll go before God. and we can ask.
Well, maybe, Howard. I mean, that's you're reflecting your religion. It may be that it just goes black, or it may be that we merge into the light and we become everything. It could be that Edgar Cayce was right, and that suddenly we have access to all the information in all of recorded history between the skeins of time and space, to quote Cayce. I mean, there's a thousand things that might happen when we die.
Yeah, Tom, just one thing, though, and I'll let it go, is we're going to ask God a lot of questions, but God will just have one question for us. He'll have the same question for everybody.
I'm listening.
And that will be, what did you do with your life that I gave you?
Okay, so you're in conflict with a good chunk of Christianity. You know, the evangelical Christianity says it doesn't matter what you did as long as you confess Jesus. The Calvinistic Christianity says it doesn't matter what you do, period, because your salvation is determined before you are born. And that's why we have to find rich people, because those are the ones that God has blessed. And, you know, I mean, you're reflecting a very narrow slice of Christian theology, Howard.
I'll take a quick step, but what I'm saying is this, that God will ask you what you did with your life, and the answer you want to have is that I accepted your son, Jesus.
Okay,
Jesus,
so you're part of the salvationists. Jesus said that in the last days that people are going to come before him, and he was going to separate them based on whether they fed the homeless, whether they gave water to the thirsty, whether they visited those in prison, whether they healed the sick, and whether they welcomed the stranger. I mean, it's right there in Matthew 25. I encourage you to read it, Howard. Jesus did not say you have to have accepted me. So, you know, you want to get into a theological argument. Good luck. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Wasn't intending to debate theology today, but it's fascinating stuff. We'll be back with more of your calls in just a moment. It's 27 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and remarkable stuff, right? Maverick in Bellevue, Washington. Hey, Maverick, what's on your mind today?
My goodness gracious, Tom, this is perhaps the most exciting topic I have ever heard you bring up on your program.
And intelligent design?
The controversy regarding it and how silly it is. Yes, I mean, intelligent design, and I'll try to be brief here because this is something I feel very passionate about. And I've also been very curious as to where you have stood on this for the last 3 years that I've been listening to. But the immediate problem that intelligent design presents is who designed the designer.
Right.
I mean, it's that obvious. So you're starting from a dead end in the beginning. And I say it's us, man-made God. It makes the most sense. I mean, faith is really just belief on bad evidence.
Yeah.
Natural selection is improbable, but it's not impossible. And it's like the lottery. You know, your chance of winning the lottery is highly improbable, but the chance of someone winning the lottery is not.
So, you know, I get that, Maverick. So here, this is. Are you familiar with George Hotz, H-O-T-Z?
No, I'm a big fan of Dawkins, Hitchens, et cetera.
No, I get that. I'm going to go off a little bit on a peripheral direction here that I think is actually, you know, right from the core of all this. George Hotz is one of the guys who was the backer and founder of the self-driving startup Comma.ai. And it's one of the companies that's working on AI cars, you know, self-driving cars and things like that, and on artificial intelligence. And he did a presentation at South by Southwest last week called Jailbreaking the Simulation. And he says, all of us are an advanced simulation observed by either an omnipotent extraterrestrial or an artificial intelligence far beyond the realm of human conception and understanding. You know, this is quoting from his presentation, quote, there's no evidence this is not true. Which takes us back to what's-his-name's teapot, you know,
Russell.
Yeah, Bertrand Russell's teapot, thank you, that there's this teapot floating around, you know, in interstellar space, and because we can't see it, that's proof that's not proof that it's not there. And then he goes on to say the universe itself is potentially a computer simulation, either a video game or some other form of entertainment for advanced life forms, or possibly some type of artificially intelligence-guided simulation of ancestral life created by a far future version of humanity. Is it possible that the world that we're living in, that this is What was the movie that Jim Carrey was in? Newton? No. What was the guy? Madison? Whatever his name was. You know, we're all living in a simulation.
Oh, The Unbearable Sunshine of the Something Mind or something like
no,
that?
No, that was a different one, but whatever, yeah.
Oh, sorry. All right. Well, your question was specifically that I would like to answer that you just set up. Oh, about the...
it's like ants in an ant farm, right? We look at the ant farm, the ants are thinking, oh, I got a hole, I got a burrow, it's kind of weird, but,
yeah.
You know...
Yeah, so Sam Harris addresses...
Truman Show is what I was thinking of.
And Truman Show, right. So Sam Harris addresses this, and he's a neurobiologist and an incredibly smart person.
Yeah.
And I think that that theory about us being part of a simulation is fascinating, but I don't buy it. And I cannot disprove it.
There is no evidence against it.
That's true. But there's a lot of things that we can't prove. However, I think the only logical, rational path under those circumstances is to go with what is most likely, most probable.
So you're reverting to Occam's razor here.
Exactly. Occam's razor shows this to be true.
Yeah.
I don't want to dominate your show, Tom, but thank you so much for bringing up this topic, because I firmly believe that religion means to do us real harm,
yeah.
And it has. Any group of people that is looking forward to the end of the world, regardless of everyone else here, is dangerous.
Or even the end of their own lives. I mean, that's what animates many of these suicide bombers, you know, looking forward to the end of their own lives and going to heaven and having their 70 virgins and all that. Maverick, I got to move along, but thank you. You know, well said on all points. Jen in Redford, Wisconsin. Hey, Jen, what's up?
Hey, I joined the conversation late, so I hope that I'm relevant. But as an ordained minister, I look at, like, the creation story as shown in the Judeo-Christian Bible and other faiths and traditions as mythology to explain what we have no way of explaining.
Right.
It's not to be believed necessarily, but it's just something to, like, help our feeble brains get through it.
Well, I think that, you know, the origins of religion and science are probably pretty close to identical. They're attempts mm-hmm. by human beings to understand why things happen, and thus mm-hmm. through that understanding, hopefully gain some control over it. And that's where religion goes from, you know, where science goes from, okay, we understand now how DNA works, now let's try modifying that DNA. And this was, you know, Gregor uh-huh. Mendel and all that kind of stuff, or even the modern, you know, CRISPR stuff. And with religion, it's like, okay, we think we understand how this all came about. There must be this man up in the sky who, you know, gets upset with us from time to time. So how do we influence him? Oh, we sacrifice kids, you know, let's take Isaac up on the mountain and nearly cut his throat or smash his head in with a rock or whatever whatever he was going to do. And it seems like they're kind of the same thing, and this is why science has largely replaced religion in the more secular sphere, and particularly in Europe. I lived mm-hmm. in Europe for a year, and even in Europe, most of the people who are churchgoers are not actually religious. They don't. It's not so much they believe it; it's more of a social experience. Whereas here in the United States,
like a secular humanism kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, even in the Lutheran and Catholic Church, right? I mean, you know, uh-huh. I lived in this little town and got to know a lot of these people. And science has become a secular religion. And then you get guys like my guest today, Michael Behe, who comes along and says, uh-huh. "I'm a scientist." And I'm telling you, you got to discard science now. So he's saying about science the same thing that, you know, people who are followers of science are saying about religion. I'm saying that they have, you know, a common thread, trying to understand the world and then trying mm-hmm. to understand, using that understanding to manipulate the world in ways that benefit us. Your thoughts on that as an ordained minister, Jen?
My thoughts are, we have brains, we should use them.
Brilliant. I love it.
You know, We have reason. Let's employ it.
Yeah.
That religion doesn't explain things. Science does a darn good job of explaining so many things, but neither of them are foolproof because both of them are human design. I mean, we made it up, and, you know, so let's live and be decent to each other and try to, in my occupation, we call it stewardship.
Yeah.
You know, let's be good stewards of what we have and not be jerks about it. You know, that's my basic.
And not be so arrogant.
Not be a jerk.
Yeah, and not be so arrogant as to think that, you know, our understanding is the only understanding. Although, you know, again, back in the day, you know, mm-hmm. Back down in Aztec Mexico, they, you know, they threw a bunch of kids into a pit in order to make sure that the rains came, and sure enough, the rains came. So they just kept throwing kids into pits every year because every year the rain came. When I lived in
coincidence is wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah, well, or just the natural world. When I lived in Germany, I heard the story that the reason that we light up trees is because literally in Germany, or in Northern Europe, but specifically in Germany, you know, they found these little Stonehenge kind of things that date back to Neolithic times, to, you know, 10-15,000 years ago, or just right after the end of the Ice Age, and they seem to be designed mostly to predict the equinoxes and
the
solstices, yeah.
Right,
the solstices and the equinoxes.
Yeah.
And that you know, the story that I was told is that, you know, the quote scientists of the day were also the religious folks of the day. And, mm-hmm. you know, they were the shaman, essentially. And they knew from looking at where the shadows were falling on their little Stonehenge thing that today, December 25th, is going to be the shortest, or 22nd, is going to be the shortest day of the year. And so on that shortest day of the year, which all the people were getting freaked out about because the sun was getting dimmer and dimmer and dimmer, on that shortest day of the year, the head priest would go up on the tallest mountain and find the biggest pine tree he could, because pine trees are full of pitch, mm-hmm. and they burn really well, and he'd light that sucker on fire and it would light up the sky, and he'd say, "Sun, reappear!" And the next day would be a little bit longer, and the next day would be a little bit longer, and for a whole other year the people would be going, "He did it again!" You know, and so I mean,
by gosh,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, and this is kind of the origin of both religion and science, is, you know, perceived uh-huh. phenomena leading to logical conclusions, which are then testable hypotheses over time. And mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. when they stopped lighting the tree every winter in, you know, 9,312 years ago, or whenever it was, or maybe 400 years ago, when they stopped uh-huh. lighting the tree, they discovered that the sun still came back, and that diminished the power of the priest. But, you know, with science, we can say, okay, you know, if you stop taking an antibiotic, you know, that you're going to get an infection back, and it's not going to be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little more observable.
Yeah, and you know what? When it's really dark, it sure is nice to see lights or a tree burning.
There you go.
Like that.
Even metaphorically, like a Christmas tree, you know, or not metaphorically,
but,
you know, meta to it.
It feels good, it lifts our spirits, and we're less likely to be jerks.
There you go, And don't be a jerk. That's Jen's best advice for the day, and I think it's spectacular.
That is my religious philosophy. Don't be a jerk.
From an ordained minister. Jen, thank you so much for the call, and thanks for listening to us. And thanks for listening to us there. Yeah, bye-bye, in Wisconsin on Sirius XM. We'll be back with, well, we're going to check in with Talk Media News in about 4 minutes, so stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
More of the news of the day and your calls with the Tom Hartman Program, helping you win the water cooler wars in just a moment. And welcome back, Oliver in New York City. Watch this on YouTube. Hey, Oliver, what's up?
Oh, good afternoon.
Hey.
I'm going to say something very briefly. The first thing, I'm going to say two things and make it as brief as possible, okay?
Sure.
I sent you your Twitter something about a plasma converter and a plasma arc recycler. It's very promising. You can get rid of everything on Earth that you put into them except nuclear waste. Everything. Doesn't matter what it is, okay?
So plasma is basically superheated gases.
Yes, I know.
And so you're suggesting that using plasma, the heat is so great that it literally tears molecules down to atoms, and that right. In some cases turns atoms into ions, thus creating more plasma. That plasma-based garbage disposal system is what we need.
Yes.
Is it practical? Right now, to generate plasma, it takes massive amounts of electricity.
No, actually, a plasma converter will run itself, with the electricity provided, and then produce enough electricity so they can self-power itself and still have enough.
But you need a massive electromagnetic field to hold that plasma in space, because otherwise, if it hits the edges of the thing, it'll melt them.
No. I sent you two articles via Twitter.
Yeah,
right?
I'll check them out.
I sent you the link. Okay,
but,
all right.
But I can't do that while we're talking.
Yeah, I understand. Now, this is research, talking about religion and all that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'll say a couple of things. We are all spiritual beings, plants, insects, everything. Elon Musk believes that we are like some kind of advanced, super advanced, futuristic algorithm, and we're just part of a matrix.
Right.
He doesn't say he knows it, but he suspects that. So.
Well, that's what I was saying about George Holtz, this guy who is the founder of Comma.ai. He did this presentation at South by Southwest last week, saying that we're living in a simulation. We're not sure if it's from extraterrestrials who are treating us like, you know, ants in an ant farm, my phrase not his, or whether it is ourselves, humans, you know, 1,000 years in the future, having created a simulation, and we are what they watch on TV.
Yeah. I can tell you this. I had a lifetime experience. I have a story that's never been told, never been heard. There is, I don't know, I'm not certain if it is God as is represented in the Bible or other religious texts from other religions or other. I can tell you this here. Before the end of the century, all religions will end. But there is a superpower that can create things that are mind-boggling. Just think about a baby falling 3 feet, 3 floors out of a window, hits the ground, and yet lives. Other babies fall, they die. A man jumps out of
That's what you're defining here, Oliver, is the essence of randomness. And by the way, babies less than a year old, most of their bones are still basically cartilage. Same with kittens and puppies. It's why they can fall and not die. They don't break like we do.
Yeah, I understand that.
They're not yet fully calcified.
But about babies, there are many babies that do fall out and they die.
Sure, of course.
But there are some who fall out of a third floor, whatever, and live.
But that doesn't defy the law of physics. That's not some supernatural being intervening. That's within the realm of physical explanation.
A statue crying, men walking on hot burning coals, or sharp swords.
The walking on hot burning coals is real simple. You just burn those coals down to the point where there's not a lot of thermal mass and there's a whole enormous amount of ash, and anybody can walk on them as long as they don't stop moving. You haven't convinced me, Oliver. I'll check out your tweet, though. Thank you. Thanks for the call. We'll be back. We're going to check in with Ellen Ratner with Talk Media News in just a moment. Welcome back. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com and Ellen Ratner's new book, Loving What You Do. And speaking of Ellen Ratner and the old goat, which she lovingly calls herself, what we all lovingly call Ellen, as well as you do yourself. And you began the phrase, in fact, Ellen. Welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you so much. So the big news is that Paul Manafort was just sentenced in D.C., and now he's going to do 7.5 years in prison. That doesn't mean time off for good behavior. But as soon as he was sentenced, New York Cyrus Vance Jr. actually went after him, which is out of the government's ability to pardon him in New York State, for mortgage fraud. So that would be a whole other case that he's going to have to deal with.
And these are not charges for which he was sentenced by either Judge Jackson or Judge Ellis. And therefore, the double jeopardy defense won't work for him, if I understand that correctly.
That's correct. And so this is a whole new charge. It's a whole new thing. And it is out of reach of President Trump's ability to pardon him.
Yeah, fascinating, fascinating stuff.
He would have to be pardoned by the governor of New York State. Well, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Now, there was a Cyrus Vance who got a big campaign donation and backed away from something. And I'm not remembering if that was the Epstein case. I don't think it was the Epstein case. It was something else. It was Jared Kushner. No, it was Ivanka
right.
Trump. Ivanka Trump and either her brother or Jared Kushner were about to be indicted in New York. And right. I guess it must have been this Vance Jr. guy, and he got a big campaign contribution, and he dropped the indictments.
Well, he did drop the indictment, and next week comes out a book called Kushner Incorporated, and it talks about Air Force One travel. I don't know whether it's going to talk about this being dropped or not, but it's right. called Kushner Incorporated, and it comes out next week.
So the same Cyrus, you know, because I'm old enough to remember his dad, you know, Cyrus Vance, who
right,
worked in the
course.
Carter administration, and you know, was other good things. But or even before that, maybe Lyndon Johnson. But do you think that this is an attempt at redemption, or is this just, you know, he's doing his job? Or
I don't really know. My guess is that he's just doing his job
yeah.
Because he was given this information by people that worked for him.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. What else is up, Ellen?
Okay, well, so California has eliminated, this is Governor Newsom, the death penalty. Along with Oregon, Colorado, and Pennsylvania, which have also eliminated the death penalty. They have over 700 people on death row in California. Mm. And, of course, Trump objects to that. Now, I'm a spiritualist, so I don't want these people sent out into the ethers at all because I think they haven't cooked long enough here, but that's just my view.
That's interesting. Yeah. We can get into that. Actually, we're talking about religion this hour, so we had an intelligent
oh, really?
Design
oh, okay.
guy on.
I'm a spiritualist minister. I can marry and bury you in the state of New York.
There you go. Okay. Do you think there's an intelligent designer, Ellen?
I actually do.
Fascinating.
But that's just me.
Yeah,
how do all of these, you know, you and I have been emailing back and forth a little bit about the fact that there are so many galaxies, and each galaxy has 100 billion stars or so.
Yeah, yeah. Where did that all come from?
How is there not people?
But I believe there's people all over the universe. I'm totally
right.
down with that. The question is, who designed the designer? Who invented all this? And that's a question
I
don't think any of us have an answer to. Anyhow, back to the news of the day. What else is going on in the world?
Okay, so now the big news that we've been talking about this morning on my various radio stations is the cheating scandal.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what happened is these parents would either give money to a school or they actually gave it to a nonprofit, Key Incorporated, which was a nonprofit that then paid people off. And the cheating scandal was that they said that their people were athletic stars, which they weren't. That they had done better in the tests for school, which of course the kids didn't take the tests. They had paid other people to pay for it. I mean, it's unbelievable. So far, they've indicted 50 people, but we think that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
I remember
back in the late 60s, a friend of mine, I'm not going to give his last name, his first name was Brad, had started a company in a storefront across the street from the campus, right on, I think it was on Albert Street or Grand River Avenue, right across from MSU, writing term papers for people. And in fact, a number of us were writing term papers for money and selling them to Brad, and then Brad was selling them on campus. And eventually they shut him down and the state made it illegal. But,
I remember that term papers were the big scandal when we were going to college.
Yeah, exactly. My point. And I think that's probably how Donald Trump and George W. Bush got through college, frankly. But, this has a long history. But B, in the 30 seconds we have left, how is this different from Jared Kushner's dad giving $2.5 million to Harvard and Kushner then getting into Harvard with bad grades, or George Herbert Walker Bush doing the same thing with his son, George W. Bush?
Well, in our day, people used to give money to universities, and then the universities would kind of look the other way.
Yeah.
But nowadays, it's much more complex in terms of the cheating scandals. We didn't used to pay people to take exams for us. We just used to give money to colleges, and that's
well,
what,
wealthy
that's
families.
What happened.
But, I mean, wealthy families are still getting away with this, Ellen.
Well, that's very true.
It's called legacy.
That's true. It's called legacy admissions, and that's if you have a family member that went to a school.
Right, right. It's like the average person, the average working person who doesn't come from a family with the ability to confer a legacy or a large gift has to be looking at this going, wow, this really is a rigged system. Ellen, thanks so much
it
for being with us.
It is.
Amen. TalkMediaNews.com is the website. Thank you, Ellen. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.